everybody, it's time for another episode of Star Wars All In, the show that goes all in and all the details of the characters, places, concepts, and things from that galaxy far, far away. My name is Mac, and I'm here with my fellow gallery viewer, Ross.
Mac, it's great to be back today. We are talking Dark Troopers. We are talking Mandalorians. We are talking ships formerly named Slave One. We are talking
the fire
everything
spray.
Related to Chapter 16 of The Mandalorian titled The Rescue. We are talking about the Season 2 finale of The Mandalorian, along with a little sprinkling of the gallery episode that goes along with it.
We watched the gallery episode that just recently came out where they sort of went through that and figured it's time to give our thoughts.
Yes, it is, and we're very excited to do so. Mac, I get the feeling we're going to have a lot to say.
Let's just get into it. I mean, I don't know how you could be a Star Wars fan and not have seen the end of Mandalorian 2 by, like, what are we? Like 8 months, 9 months?
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up on a year of when the season started.
But if you haven't, Luke Skywalker. Okay, I've ruined it for you if somehow you ended up here without that. Man, so that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the sort of off-the-rails wild finale to Season 2 of The Mandalorian.
Yeah, we all had a lot of speculation on where season two would end up. You know, we ended episode 7, you know, right before this, and whatever, I can't remember the chapter number at this point, maybe chapter 15. And you know, we're okay, they know where Moff Gideon is, right? They have a plan, they have the coordinates, they're going for him, right? Oh, how are they gonna get there? How are they gonna fight their way on?
Yeah, well, once Grogu is stolen by the Dark Troopers at the end of the last episode, it was so fun to see, like, oh, we're going on the offensive.
Yeah, absolutely. Going for the throat. And we're just starting off. We're here. We're into it. You know, we jump right into the episode, right? They're coming out shooting. They're trying, you know, Boba Fett is playing his little ploy here to get them to sneak on board in a shuttle. And they managed to get on, and the plan here is essentially to create a distraction, right? We see the group of awesome insurgents, we'll call them, right?
Yeah,
we've got Fennec Shan and Cara Dune and Bo-Katan and the heck's the other one's name? Koska Reeves. The other one, what's the other one? Wolves isn't around.
I don't think he's.
Yeah, Wolves is busy. Something. Anyway, so we've got this this episode set up here where it's a really, really simple episode. There isn't much to it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some of the big moments here. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, as we were saying earlier. So, Mac, let's talk about, first off, just the fight through the bridge, right? Entering the ship and the shuttle, you know, all the space battle stuff and fighting to the bridge, you know? Let's talk about that first before we talk about the other side of what's going on. So... some great action here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they definitely... it's a finale, so they've pulled out the stops, and they're trying to make the action as interesting as possible. And one thing, at the time you're listening to this, Shang-Chi has just come out, and it has reminded me again of what the key ingredient of action that sometimes gets lost in the modern age, but, like, sense of place. I love the fact that during these fights, you like there's that cargo room that they're blasting through, and you know what the space feels like, which is great because later on there's another action. Actually, there's another action beat in pretty much every single place they go through, whether it's that bridge that has the two like open, you know, force field areas, so you can. I don't know why you would set it this way, but it's set to, if you fall down, it just pushes you out to space rather than stopping you, which you think would be the point of having force fields there.
Well, there's got to be a bridge for a reason, right? There's got to be a bridge. I mean...
and there can't be a...
you know what I think it is? That's where the Dark Troopers go in and out, or at least one of the spots.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah, that's probably what it's for.
And it's a bridge without, you know, handrails, because classic. Again, this is Star Wars, so there are no worker safety protocols.
Sure,
not,
sure.
Especially not during the Empire.
No, not at all. And hey, the budget's way lower now.
I was going to say, I mean, if you fall out there, that's okay. There's another kid who's signing up and being conscripted on some planet.
Yes, that's true. That's true. There's but always more to serve. So and if not, hey, we'll duct.
So yeah, so we go from like the crash into the what do they call it? Did they call it just the launch port?
Launch tube, I think.
Launch tube.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, because it's where TIE fighters are getting lined up and then being shot down the length of the ship. And I love the one Imperial who's just yo, you're blocking the launch tube. What are you doing? What are you? And then like way too late realizes like exactly what they're doing.
Poor guy just gets shot. They had no. I mean, you would think at least Gideon would be suspicious and would warn them, right? Like, wouldn't they all be on guard now?
No, well, Gideon, remember, Gideon's a good Imperial officer, so he remembers that every single person's expendable. Yeah, but sir, this is the Remnant. We can't conscript as much as we used to. The Empire will rise again. It'll be fine.
Now that we have the child. Okay, so our group reaches the bridge, takes control of the ship, and realizes Gideon isn't there.
Right. And the fun thing about it is their job is to steal the ship and take control of it. And meanwhile, we see our hero, the Mandalorian, is kind of held back, letting them kind of break everything up because his job is to get Grogu.
Mm-hmm. So he sneaks through the ship, and the first thing he does is tries to essentially dispense of the Dark Troopers. They have been activated, and he is trying to send them out into space. But one manages to get through the door before he's able to stop them, and a serious fight ensues. Did you expect it to be so difficult for him to take down one Dark Trooper? Were you expecting that? Because by the time we got here, we still don't know where this episode is going. At this point, we assume there's just going to be a big finale fight between the heroes and the villains being, you know, the Dark Troopers and Moff Gideon, and the heroes just being what we've seen up till now, right? Some fight, you know, maybe Grogu will do something spectacular like he did at the end of, you know, season one. Maybe there'll be some sort of sacrifice like there was with IG-11, you know, like we're expecting a big moment like that, I think. I don't think anyone at this point was expecting any sort of cameo.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess probably the expectations I had was them taking the ship and dealing a heavy blow to Gideon's forces.
Mm-hmm.
And
Gideon still surviving, though?
I expected that. And I expected Din to have, like, a good fight with him and then kind of realize that, like, to be honest, I thought Gideon would then represent, like, oh, maybe he has some dark side powers and that... Okay, no, only the child's going to be able to actually, like, help him fight Gideon because Mandalorian's, you know, Din's a guy, not a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's where we were going to go, and I was so pleased that we didn't. Now, you said, like, were you surprised that it was so hard to take down a Dark Trooper? Yes, I've played Dark Forces. I did expect that. And I was really surprised how much of a threat they let those things be.
Well, when you look at it in hindsight with what we get at the end, it makes sense as why they wanted to make them appear so threatening and powerful, right? To show that power disparity between a Jedi
that Din barely survives an encounter with one of these. And there's a room of 30 of them that just got blown out to space.
Right. So here now, it's more about just raising the stakes. But in this moment, him blowing them out to space, I'm not thinking they're coming back. I'm thinking, well, this was the fight with the Dark Trooper. It was awesome. It was everything, you know. It looked good. It felt good. There was some great stuff. You know, we saw the whistling birds be not effective against it. We saw the flamethrower of him, you know, trying to burn through it. So I really, really love that we get those really hands-on fighting moments. It wasn't just shooting them with blasters and, you know, having them be stronger stormtroopers.
And this is also the type of violence that I love from comic books and Star Wars of... It makes it really bone crunching without actually being gory and visceral.
Brutal, yeah.
Like just when he's using his piston arm, the Dark Trooper, and he's just pounding into the helmet. Yeah. You're like, well, that's Beskar. It's going to be fine. I mean, the head inside there's not going to be, but like the helmet's not going to give way because it's you know a magic space helmet,
right?
But to hear that bell ringing sound every time it connected, it sells so much of how brutal this attack is without having it actually be anything viscerally, like, causing your nervous system to go into shock or, mm-hmm. like, goose, you know, for your hairs to stand up on your back of the neck. It's not gruesome. It's just brutal.
Yes, absolutely. Brutal is a really fair way to put it, I think. It is... It's painful to watch, but it ends really, really spectacularly. You know, he uses the Beskar pike to behead the Dark Trooper, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And I mean, the special effects look great all throughout.
Yeah,
the Dark Troopers are great to see. I love it,
and very well realized for what is obviously a full CGI character. They did a really good job of grounding that thing.
I would love to see if they have any physical mock-ups or like a head or a, you know, arm or whatever.
I mean, they'd have to have something for eye lines and stuff, I'm assuming. Yeah. Especially
that could just be a tennis ball.
Well, actually, I take that back. They probably have a person in a green screen suit on stilts because some of that fight choreography, they must have fought against something.
Yeah, you can't just... you can't make it look that good without it.
Yeah, no, we need to see that. Okay, gallery, next episode.
We know what we need. Okay, so after the fight with the Dark Trooper...
Oh, and the one thing I was going to say is, like you said, we think those 30 Dark Troopers got blown into space, they're done. And I think at this exact moment in the show, we're like wiping our forehead going, whew, because if one of those was doing that, I mean, if that room had gotten out...
There's no way they could take all of those down. So, to me, that was the resolution of like, well, since they clearly can't fight them, and since that is clearly the only option, like, my only other thought was like, well, maybe they'll blow up the ship. Since the goal is to get the ship, maybe that's where they'll fail. Because I expected there to be some sort of failure here. I expected something to go wrong. And I was like, well, maybe they just won't get the ship. Maybe they'll have to blow it up to take the Dark Troopers out. Maybe, once again, someone will sacrifice themselves to blow up the ship. You know, whatever. But, like, at most, that was kind of where my head was at with it. If they did come back, there was no way they could possibly fight them in an actual fight, right?
Right.
And so after this, we move on to the cell. And, you know, Din is able to find Grogu there. And Moff Gideon with the Darksaber. So the triumphant return of the Darksaber for a lot of fans. I mean, you know, we've seen it in spurts here. Obviously, at the end of season one, we saw it, you know, he lit it up when he was, you know, teasing Grogu with it earlier. So we've seen it a few times, but this is the first time we're going to really see it in action. And seeing it drawn here as the doors open, I think a lot of people... got real excited real quick, right? Well, Mac, you're the huge Darksaber fan here, more than me.
It's a Mandalorian lightsaber, right, and it's got a black core. That doesn't even work in physics, but who cares?
I like the fact that it's just like a blade, like the
it's
shape
like a katana
of it. That is my favorite part of it, for sure.
Well,
the handle design and all that,
When you look at it, it's very much made like a katana.
Absolutely.
It has like one leading edge. I mean, it's a lightsaber, so technically any side of it will cut through you, but... It's much... Whereas the lightsabers are sabers, they're more fencing foil kind of stuff, or what their fight choreography base is like kendo, like katana practice sticks. This is much more of a like a cutlass, and much more of a swinging, chopping blade.
Yeah.
And I love that Gideon's down here because we see Gideon sort of react to like the launch tube getting hit, but then we don't really know what happens to him. And it's brilliant. And he's like, oh, I know right where they're going to go. I'm going to go down there right now. I know where this is all headed, you know, like, and I think it just shows again how brilliant it is. And I love his negotiation here is just very like, well, I know exactly where I'm standing and what pieces on the board I have and I recognize what threat you actually are to me, which is not nothing. I'm not the classic and arrogant Imperial. Like, I realize that like, you're a problem, and I don't want to actually deal with you.
Right. If I just kill this child right now, you will most likely kill me. Like, there is, I can't stop that from happening just because I have the child prisoner.
Right.
Right. So, like, we see that right away, obviously, that great push and pull of, like, what will happen here, obviously. Like, will Grogu do something to get them out of this? That's kind of where I'm at the moment. And then when
he's got little tiny binder clips.
Well, you know, he could still move his hands. Like, those things would not stop.
A Jedi master.
Yeah. So at this point, Gideon gives his little speech about, I only wanted the blood. Like, you can take him and go. Just leave. Like, I just wanted the blood. It's cool, man. Just go.
I got what I want. You got what you want. Everybody wins.
And because of what you just said, Mac, about like him wanting to live through this, him wanting to fight another day, like, I believed it. Like, I honestly thought, oh, maybe this is how it will end, and maybe there's something else that's going to happen or whatever. Like, maybe this will lead into something new. Like, and maybe Gideon will just be back next year. Like, you know, that's what it'll be. And then when he, you know, about a second later, as soon as you see him move behind his back, you kind of like, okay, now, like, the music starts to change and you understand what's about to happen. There was a brief second where I did believe it.
Well, I think Gideon's playing from Palpatine's playbook.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, if you don't move into a position where I can attack you, then yeah, you take the child. I'll use the tracker I put into him to find him again later, and I have the blood, so we're good. Oh, you did step in a way that I can get behind you. Oh, well, then I'm going to kill you. I have the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he definitely takes a swing, and
my favorite part about this is every direction I win.
Yeah. You know, my favorite thing about Star Wars is how a light bump from a staff, or a different light bump from another staff, can cause a jetpack to go haywire, but a slash from a darksaber, nothing.
Well, if you have your stuff all in good maintenance, I don't know, man. Like, jetpacks are like
nothing.
Horribly in.
Okay, so hypothetically, right? Yeah, All right, Han Solo hits the booster or whatever. Well, actually, he doesn't. He hits the back of it. We see where it's damaged, like, because we see where it's been patched. Yeah. So how does that staff, like, if he had hit the rocket booster, like, maybe that part isn't Beskar. Maybe that part's just good old Dunium or whatever. I don't know.
Maybe.
But, like, come on. If that can survive.
Maybe here's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. So first off, he hits him with a, is it the Force Pike or is it one of the Vibros? I can't remember exactly what weapon Han has, but I'm pretty sure it's a powered weapon. It's not just a stick.
I don't remember.
I think it's either a Force Pike or it's a Vibroglaive.
Well, let's put it this way.
I'm being too nerdy.
In the moment, like in 1983 film, it's just a stick. Well, like, whatever it's meant to be, sure.
Oh, sure, sure,
but
sure.
It is very much just like one of the, like the, not a gaffy stick, but I'm pretty sure it's similar to that. Yeah, I think it is a pike, yeah. But not a pike, the species. A pike.
Yeah, no, it's pike with a Y, not pike with an I. I guess the whole thing about it is, like, you making me just think about it, like, because I don't think I've ever thought about, like, what do you think happened with the rocket pack? Well, Han Solo hit him and plot device happened and Boba Fett's in the bottom of the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
I didn't think about the mechanics of it.
And then 30 years later,
here's what I'd like to think.
John Favreau fixed it. George Lucas can't do anything right.
Here's how I would feel, is he hits the missile, like the internal components of the rocket missile on the back, causing that to fire without releasing from the jetpack, which causes the entire pack to fire off.
I'll go with it. Let's do it. I love it.
Okay.
I love it. Perfect.
And then it kind of makes sense.
That can be your headcanon too, listeners.
Well, because the other thing about it is, like, because Din's doesn't have that. Right. Din's is just the jetpack.
Fair.
So
fair.
That's some headcanon. That fair. Functionally works
all
right, right now.
Someone reach out to Dave. Someone write a handwritten letter to George. Ask him what his thoughts are on this. Let's get them all together. Someone FaceTime Pablo.
My friend who I'm watching through Bad Batch with, we also watch like Star Trek, and we've gotten into our own little internal joke about, like, well, how's it happening? And it's like Star Trek. So we talk about, oh, the dramaton particles were reaching saturation in the room. That's why this happened. And we kept using, like, dramaton particles as just explaining that, like, these dramatic, like, presence of things, this scientific phenomenon makes the drama go up. And I've, like, that's kind of what's happening in Star Wars. It's just like, well, why did it happen? Well, because if Din's rocket pack went off in this room, it'd be real bad for him. So that's not good storytelling. So it doesn't happen.
So Moff Gideon is slicing away with the darksaber. And an amazing fight pursues. A fight that feels very realistic. That feels very much like these two actors were doing it.
Yeah.
Even though, who knows if they were. It very much feels like, okay, you've got like this 50-something, 60-something, you know, admiral or whatever of the Imperial Navy.
Governor.
And you've got this 40-something-year-old Mandalorian bounty hunter who is probably in the prime of his,
you know,
of his physical shape. Like, you know, you're a guy in your, like, late 40s who's been in shape your whole life. Like, that's probably your peak, you know, for the most part. Maybe you're a little weary. But so this guy here, like, they have a fight that feels, it's not drawn out. It's very realistic. There's no, mustache twirling. It's just a good, solid.
And it's got the right amount of weight, because Gideon's whole thing is Gideon obviously has trained in fencing. He knows how to use this saber fairly well. But he's also an older man who's not used to doing his own dirty work. So there's definitely a fatigue that's happening after, a couple seconds into the fight of like, oh, I'm not as in shape as this dude.
Definitely.
And then Din is doing all this stuff, but he's like, I like guns. This spear, I know how to use it, but like, I haven't trained for every moment of my life for a spear. I've trained every moment of my life for other weapons.
Absolutely. And not only that, but like, as good as a Beskar spear is here, I mean, it's probably like the second best thing you can hope for. I mean, after a lightsaber, like,
it is nice it doesn't get cut in half when the dark saber hits.
It's quite nice, but like, it's not exactly like you can't just bump someone in the leg with that and have it hurt them. Like, you really have to stab them with it or like swing it like a bat.
Real baseball
like,
bat.
Like it's not as easy to deliver a hurtful blow with that either.
Other than the pointy end, it's a non-lethal weapon. It's a bludgeoning weapon, not a omnidirectional cutting tool like the lightsaber.
Yeah, the lightsaber that's just a small little flick can give you a
can cut right through
burn. Yeah. So anyway, it's a great fight, and obviously our hero comes out on top, returning Gideon and Grogu to the bridge where Bo-Katan is none too happy.
Yeah.
And this is where we get the scene that like, oh, this is why there's still time left in the episode. There is another conflict coming we didn't see coming. There is about to be a fight between Koska Reeves, Bo-Katan, against the other three. That's what I was expecting. They were going to basically have a 2-3 brawl in the middle of this ship.
Because we sum it up of Gideon comes in chains, basically being brought in by Din, and Din has the darksaber, which instantly Bo-Katan has opinions about this. And Din's like, no, here, I don't know, take it. And Gideon's like, oh, she can't take it. It has to be one in combat. And Din looks down and is like, no, I give it to you. I yield, whatever. I super don't want this thing. I don't care.
I love that. I love it. I love it. I love it. Because it just shows like how serious Din is about what his goals are.
It's dividing the two Mandalorians pretty well. Right. Because like, Bo-Katan has already sort of mocked Din for like, oh, you're a child of the watch, you're never showing your face. What hokey traditions you lead to. And then now she's like, but I have our own hokey traditions, which is the darksaber must be earned in combat.
You know what? I did never think about that in that way, but that's a very good point, especially because of the muddliness of the history of the darksaber throughout Star Wars. You know, there are big chunks of it there were missing, and there's big chunks of Bo-Katan's story that were missing. So there's a lot we'll learn, I'm sure, in Book of Boba Fett and Season 3 of Mando, and probably in Bad Batch or some other animated show at some point. I'm sure we'll get the Siege, we'll get more Mandalore. So it's going to happen. But this is where we get sort of our big surprise, our big twist. And I don't think I don't think anyone expected this Bo thing to not be resolved here.
Because it definitely looks like, oh, no, Bo-Katan's going to have to fight him. How does this all end? And that's also, I think, the important reason why Reeves is there, because Reeves is like, yeah, it's like Bo-Katan's one of inner circle. They probably wouldn't say anything if Bo-Katan took the saber and just took it from Din and no one asked, because there's no one else here to see it. But in Bo-Katan's mind, like, she'll always know, and she'll never respect me as the Mandalore if I don't take it by the tradition. And so this just tension. But luckily, things get worse, so they don't have to deal with that right now.
Yes, I think we were all sort of expecting that fight to happen, and then all of a sudden, the alarm starts going off, and, I think it's Fennec that shouts out, we're being boarded. And we learn that the Dark Troopers are back, and they mean business. They're coming for the bridge. They're starting to break down the door. We see that awesome arm of theirs again, where they're just pounding through
it. Boom, boom. Just like jackhammering.
So, so good. The sound effects here are great. They're terrifying. Ooh. Everybody's bracing for the fight.
And it's great because they're basically trapped up in the bridge. And at this point, what they've done again is they're setting the stage of, we see where they're coming in. We see the areas we've already been through in this ship. So we can feel the approach of how close they're getting when they come up through the turbo lift and they start coming towards the door. We know, oh, that's the door of the bridge. They're in trouble. And then the door, which is this giant, 5-inch thick piece of Durasteel, is starting to bend in because well, we saw what had happened in Din's head, and now we're going like, dude, that guy probably still has a concussion. I mean, if they can do this to a big door.
There's a reason when he takes his helmet off, he looks so misty-eyed. And it's
yeah, he's swimming a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
So we get to the stakes, and I love that even like Gideon, who's trying to gloat through this, is also kind of like, man, I hope the friend and foe identifiers on these things are working right.
Yeah, I'm sure he's like, well, he gives his big speech. Well, it'll only be me and the child left, so might as well just surrender now.
And they're like, no. And he's like, it's understandable.
So as the Dark Troopers are about to break down the door, we start to see a notice, you know, an ear twitch from Grogu. We hear the sensors start to blink, and all of a sudden, Cara Dune points out how little help one X-Wing will be.
As a X-Wing with particular markings, if you were really looking, slides past the window, and then we see it land in the cargo bay.
And at this point, I think we're all just kind of like, there's no way, right?
Well,
like, I mean, so when I saw it, like, instantly you know, like, you're like, okay, this is clearly what they're alluding to. Right. Like, you see a white and blue astromech, like you said, you see the red markings.
You see a black cloaked guy with like a gloved hand come out. Like,
yeah, once you see that, I guess it is. But like, let's just talk about. Like,
so the whole reason we do this episode is because of the recent gallery episode that's just about the last episode. And one of the comments I thought they put there was they're like, when they were like testing and looking at it, like it didn't matter how obvious they made it, people still were not ready to believe that this is, of course, who it is.
Yes. And I love that. I love that. I love that the entire time as I'm watching the green lightsaber and, you know, we're watching him go through and cut through the Dark Troopers and Force. I mean, when he uses the Force to just crush one.
Yeah.
Like, that is the...
Well, this is what
that is just such a satisfying moment, obviously.
At the time I watched it, I was like, this is the light side inversion of that Vader scene in Rogue One. This is... unlimited force power being used to deal with a situation that is honestly terrifying to normal people, but to the person, Darth Vader or Luke in this case, there's no threat. He has this matter so in hand.
Oh, absolutely. He's just hacking and slashing and using the force and in ways we have not seen him use it yet.
And so you said, when you get to the point where he's crushing it, you kind of almost think like, oh, well, why is he crushing it? Oh, boredom. He's already cut like them in every way he could think of. So now he's just like almost having fun with it because these things pose zero threat to him.
And also he, you know, how often is it that he gets to just go to town on essentially training droids for him?
Yeah, just open up.
You know, it's probably not very often, especially this is not that far removed. You know, he hasn't been a Jedi. I mean, he has at this point 6 years, but, you know, still not all that long in the grand scheme of things. And he's probably fought a lot, but he's probably not fought against another lightsaber since Vader.
He's probably been doing a lot more meditation and study and reading books and physical training, but not this kind of conflict.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than maybe some more advanced training probes he's found, you know, throughout his travels, he probably doesn't do much fighting. I mean, you know, like this.
And I love how it all ends up because, again, we see him on the monitors in the bridge cutting through all this stuff, which is great because, again, it gives us that, is this what's happening? Like, you get that sort of separation and it keeps cutting back between him and what they're doing on the bridge. And everyone on the bridge is like, this guy's on our side, right? Because, like, if he's doing this and he gets to us, we're dead. And then it just finales with the great, like, there's the, what, eight of them or whatever that are lined up at the bridge door. And the turbo lift comes up.
And they all just turn.
Yeah. Ugh. There's that great thing of just them going,
I think,
like,
that's actually earlier. I can't remember. But it's great. Like,
you're the threat, not them. Not the kids in the bridge. Who cares about them now?
Yeah. Absolutely love it. And then, like, you're standing there, you're waiting for the elevator buttons, you know, they're dinging, they're moving up. And then just, like, he's just there. Like, there's no trick to it. It's just like when they came out of the, there was a moment, oh gosh, episode 3, I think it was, where the Mandalorians are taking that freighter.
Oh,
and they just, the door just opens, they're just there. Like, they just rush out and fire. Like, there's no trick to it. There's no,
it's just real.
It's like, that, like, when you see him just come out with the lightsaber already activated, and he just brings it up and takes the first one out, and just the way he moves, like, I do wish there maybe had been a little bit of special effects to give him, like, Jedi speed, to give him, like, almost a little bit of a dash. I think that would have been really cool, but it is.
I hear what you're saying, but I think it just shows how much he doesn't have to open up to kill these things.
Yeah, that's all
and
fair. That's, but
and
like,
then, and then the big thing about it is like, in a great way, they set up that the Dark Troopers are extremely sturdy, but nothing but Beskar is sturdy enough to survive a lightsaber cut. Yeah. So most of the reason these things aren't all that threatening to him is because he can cleanly cut through them in like one good blow.
Right.
And I think that's important. Like had these been droidicas with personal shields, this would be a problem, you know, but they're not, because they're not designed as anti-Jedi weapons. They're not designed as like siege weapons. They're just designed to crush military forces.
Right.
And Jedi and droids, as we learned in the Clone Wars, are natural enemies.
Yes. Yes, they are. Well, what we didn't see is General Grievous's head has actually been wired into that ship, and he is now part of their nav computer.
And, just like, So we get to the grand reveal.
He
enters the door. Everyone in the room is like tense. Most of them have their guns drawn because, again, they don't know what we already know, that this is Luke Skywalker and he's here to help them. But he's been so terribly mysterious to this point, it makes sense that they're all tense, especially considering what this guy just did. And then he throws back the hood, and then all illusions that, like, what if it's not Luke? It's like, no, of course it was Luke. We should have known the whole time it was Luke.
And I love the slow hooking his lightsaber on his belt. I know that's a silly thing, but it's something we haven't seen a Jedi do since the prequels. Like, put a lightsaber back on their belt. Like,
he puts it on and then just, like, folds his hand in front of him. Like again, just like all right, the training's over.
It's hi, friends. So great. And so when the hood goes back, what are your first thoughts? Because my initial reaction, besides the fact that I'm already, like, bawling because Luke Skywalker's here, right?
Right.
Besides that, like, oh, that's a different actor. Like, that was my first thought, was that was an actor who looks like a young Mark Hamill who is playing a Luke Skywalker.
Well, after everything that happened with Grand Moff Tarkin and Leia, my first reaction was like, oh, they did it. They're making a young Luke Skywalker. Okay. And I don't know if I thought it was a recast or not. I think I knew it was a digital effect, because even watching the gallery show last night, I'm like, the one thing that throws me off, which is not, if I was the VFX artist, I would have made the same choice. But in the end result, the one thing that always comes off as odd is because he's just this matte black, you know, cloak on everything. Like, he looks really pale.
Yeah.
And I think it's the correct lighting for the scene. In the sense of, like, if I was a VFX artist trying to make this happen, I'd probably make the same choice. But I think in the end, he looks a little too pale for me to read him as just an actor there. Especially when you see, like, what is his name? Max, the body double.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no offense, I don't know what Max sounds like, but Max could have got you 90% of the way, just him. Like, he looked a lot like Mark Hamill.
You do the hair and the makeup and a little post-production. Yeah. No, I agree. So
we'll talk about the effect.
Yeah, I want to talk more about the feeling of it here first before we dive into the gallery stuff a little bit. So my kind of initial thought was, at first I thought it was a recast. And then once you hear the voice, as soon as I heard the voice, I'm like, okay, well, that is definitely Mark Hamill's voice.
Right.
Come to learn later, they adjusted that too. Well, but definitely, I was like, oh, that is Mark Hamill's voice. So if that is Mark Hamill's voice, and then you start to see all the over-the-shoulder shots they're doing, I'm like, okay, so this clearly is not a person. So that was the first thing.
Sure.
So then I'm like, okay, well, if this is not a recast, this doesn't look the best. It looks good. It looks like a human, but it doesn't look like Episode 6 Mark Hamill.
Right.
Now, we'll talk about maybe why that is here in a minute.
Yeah.
But that was my first reaction and my biggest surprise to it once I realized what it was, that it was the same, you know, Tarkin thing that we'd seen. Come to learn it's different, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
sure.
Like, I thought it was what we had seen before. Once I did, I was like, oh, I'm a little surprised it doesn't look a little bit more. To me, it was more like, I thought along the jawline. I thought that was kind of where it seemed a little strange.
Let's finish our episode recap, because I think the rest of our show is going to be talking about that effect and what it could have been, what it was. Yeah.
Well, I kind of am, because what I'm talking about here is like the feeling in the moment, right?
Right.
So like in that moment, it was kind of frustrating because that's what I was thinking about. Like, oh, what's going on here? Like, why didn't they just recast him? Like, wouldn't it have been better to have you've got Alden, and then you'd have whoever your young Luke is, and then we could go and make franchises, till the sun comes home, you know, like, right. let's just make it happen. Let's stop pretending and not let another Han actor age out of playing Han, like young Han. Like I'm tired of the pitter pattering around. So like,
I think
if Luke is going to come back in season three and be, you know, in four episodes and be digital the whole time, fine. But let's just recast and stop with this nonsense.
I'm going to save that for ramifications of what all this means. But like, for me, I bought it in the moment enough that, yeah. like, yes, I am processing the effect and going like, that doesn't look exactly like, like, I was nitpicking, but I honestly, I think I was still in shock enough of like, oh, it's actually Luke. Oh, he's going to pick up Grogu. He received that signal from the last episode. Din, what are you going to, this is your space child. You're going to give up your space child? How can you be a space dad if you don't have a space child?
Yes, a lot of my emotion about Luke, and I don't want to make it sound like it was all negative in the moment. It was very, very overwhelmingly positive, but I did have some thoughts that kind of took me out of the moment. But as soon as we got to that, oh, okay, they're past their little, he's past the little speech of, you know, he'll need training, whatever. I'll give my life to protect the child, which I loved. I thought was all very Luke, all very Jedi. He's never met this child before, but clearly they already have a connection and a bond because of what has happened.
The oxygen gets sucked out of the room of the, well, he doesn't want to go with you. He wants your permission.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, space dad, you're going to have to give up your space child. Like, it's the right... Oh my God, I'm having empty nest problems. Like,
oh yeah. It is far and away, I think, like the most emotionally prominent moment of the whole show. It is when he takes the helmet off, and one, he didn't have the mustache still, and that was very disappointing. We just saw him an episode ago without the helmet. He had a great mustache. So to not have the mustache, I don't know if it was because of special effects with the child being that close to his face or whatever the decision was. Just
I didn't know. I just, after he did that Imperial face thing, he was like, oh God, I haven't looked at my face in a while. How, this thing's gotten long. I need to get rid of that.
Well, I was disappointed because I thought the mustache was certainly the right move. But beyond that, yeah, I mean, this is incredibly powerful stuff, right? Him taking the helmet off, the child touching his face, you know, his reaction as he does so. I mean, this is stuff that, this is what's important about Star Wars. Having this emotional reaction and these emotional ties to these characters is what makes, I think, this stuff important.
And I think to me, the most important thing of like when it makes that turn for the scene and that Luke's kind of like a harbinger of ill tidings in the sense of like he's taking the child away from Din for all the right reasons, for all the right reasons in the universe. But now like Luke is sort of like what I liked is it turned Luke into this mysterious hermit like Obi-Wan. Like, how do you trust this guy? I don't, who understands who a Jedi is? Like, I know who Luke Skywalker is, but none of the people in this room, other than maybe Cara Dune, really know much about this person as a actual flesh and blood person.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe as a legend, but you know, even then, like it's been 6 years, like who knows what thing people believe at the moment. But what I like is it makes Luke into right. He's a guest star here. He is not going to take over the show. He is not the most important character in this room. This is still Din Djarin's story, and it's all about him. And this is just one thread of it. Whereas when you bring one of those big A-list stars, you always risk the fact of, well, do you still care about our main character, or have you flipped over to your fan favorite character? Is that who you care about in this scene anymore? And I think they did a really good job of keeping Luke mysterious and aloof and someone who, like, Din doesn't want to just trust implicitly, right? I think that's all good to make this have stakes and, again, make it that this is about the Mandalorian. Luke is just here to facilitate that story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we see Grogu and R2 have a little bit of a relationship here, budding.
That's really cute.
And as Luke picks him up very cutely as he lifts his arms up, you know, and takes him away, we have the great moment of them in the elevator or the lift before the doors close, and then we get the kind of the stagnant shot on the bridge of everybody just sort of looking defeated.
Right, and then someone going like, the X-Wing's a one-seater, is he just gonna sit in his lap the whole time?
Oh, he's like, small enough, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know, but like, you know, aren't there controls? And think about what that child does with a little like ball on the ship. Like he's gonna be that. It's gonna be a rough journey home.
Well, Luke runs a tighter ship. Luke will allow no childish behavior. I'm sure that's it.
Yeah, I just see a Jedi going like, no, stop messing with that. You know what? Force sleep. Just zonks him out.
Let's practice our meditation, Grogu. All right. So anyway, that is the end of the episode.
Thought. Yeah.
I think we were all expecting, or I was, I don't want to say we all, I was expecting a failure, a downer. And obviously we got a downbeat, if you want to call it that. I mean,
would say it's a downbeat because it really makes the show in question. I think in a good way. What did you think about season two? You're like, what the hell is season three going to be?
Yes, that was the best part about it. And like, you know, when they, so we should also mention, you know, obviously after this, there is one other thing, the Book of Boba Fett they announced at the end of that episode.
Sure.
But we'll get to that in a second. So, you know, they've already talked about, you know, each of these is a chapter, right? That's at the beginning of every episode. And the fact that it has been one continuous story, parts 1 through 16 throughout the first two seasons, right?
Right.
So that is the first thing to keep in mind here when we look at the end of this story. Because as we get into the gallery stuff here, the very first thing I want to call out, because I think we're just going to kind of jump around and
sure.
talk about some of our key points. We're not going to go through the whole episode, is... It's actually said, I kind of have it here as a quote, I think it was by Dave, culmination of two-season arc of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So culmination to me sounds very final. Like this child is not going to be back anytime soon. But at the same time, we have Din saying, I will see you again. You know, we will reunite. So kind of my theory about all of this is the Mandalorian, I think, especially because of the announcement of the Book of Boba Fett, right? The Book of Boba Fett, you can't name it the book. Announce it at the end of season two of The Mandalorian. Have it come out when season three of The Mandalorian would typically be coming out.
Right.
And have it not be a part of the whole Mandalorian show. So I very much expect what we're going to see in the future is more things like this. So if after, you know, we get season three of The Mandalorian, and that's chapter 17, presumably, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we get chapter 17 through, I don't know, 23, 24, whatever, right? We could have then one more season, or we could have, I don't know, the Book of Koska Reeves, whatever it is, right? Like, this show does not have to necessarily follow just one Mandalorian. There can be more spinoffs. And the other possibility is the show could end. The Mandalorian show could end at the end of the next season, because it's the only one I think we know for sure is happening. Do we know a season four is happening for sure?
No, but then again, we didn't know season three was happening until season two was done.
No, so. We did, because when they renewed season after season one, they announced season two and three.
Oh, I didn't
so we know that. Did. But oh. the point is, and it doesn't really ultimately matter, because if they want to, there will be. It won't
well, they
be
also have a season. Well, and the other ironic thing is they have a season four that was announced, because Book of Boba Fett is functionally another season of this same production,
yes.
because it's the same people making it.
It'll be very interesting to see how they fit it in and what all that is. But the point I wanted to make essentially was this show could end. And the characters can keep right on into another show where Din can reunite with Grogu. You know, we could see Luke and Grogu in another show potentially before we see Grogu back with Din. There are a lot of possibilities here. It's not necessarily that this story is going to continue under the Mandalorian banner, but could possibly continue somewhere else.
Interesting.
So something to think about when I hear that word culmination.
Well,
is something worth thinking about.
Well, okay, let's close one thread here. So at the end of the show, there is Jabba's palace, and Bib Fortuna is holding court there on the incredibly oversized throne that he doesn't fit in because he's not a Hutt.
Yeah.
And we have basically people getting shot in the entryway, like coming down the stairs into the palace, and here comes Fennec Shan and Boba Fett, and Bib Fortuna's like, oh, Boba, good to see... Dead. And Boba Fett pushes him out of the way, and... apparently is ready to take over Jabba's Hutt, you know, syndicate.
Yes.
Whatever remnants are left that Bib Fortuna has been watching over. And that just ends with, coming December, the Book of Boba Fett. And I think everyone lost their minds because, again, another secret they kept under their hat really, really, really well. I mean, we didn't know if Boba Fett was really going to come back until we sort of got the guy in the desert who's like, well, that's him, right? Is he coming back, or is that just like a nod of like he's gone to live in the desert and he's fine?
Yeah.
Like they did such a good job of hiding so many secrets.
Yeah. And that is my favorite thing, I think, about the man. Now that we've gotten the culmination, as they put it, the culmination of an arc, whatever arc that is, right? We've gotten season one felt like it ended on a cliffhanger, right? Season end ended an adventure, but it didn't end any sort of story. This ended a story, it felt like. And so all of this, this whole season, when we look back on it as 16 parts, it's great to have, here's a little Boba Fett sprinkled in episode 5. Okay, here's a little more Boba Fett sprinkled in episode 9. Okay, now here it is a couple episodes later. Now we're actually going to get Boba Fett, right? Like, right. He's in there. And, you know, when you look at it, part 5, part 9, part 12 or 13, whatever it is, right? 14, I think it is, because I think Ahsoka's 13. That is so interesting that he's in there sort of from the beginning, if you really want to look at it that way, as part of this show. And I really, really like that. I really, really like that they're making him more of a character. So all of that I'm super excited about. Big fan.
Well, in my opinion, okay, the way I felt as we move beyond this is season three to me feels like so much of season two. Like, if we remove the child from it, right, what's just Din is going through an identity crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, you have Boba Fett, who's presenting one tradition of Mandalorians that isn't really his. He has his own that we watched all through season one, never take off the mask, this is the way, all that, you know, the covert and, like, how that family functions. And then we've seen the true Mandalorians with Bo-Katan and friends who, like, present yet another version of Mandalore that he could has claimed to, but is not necessarily part of. And so I really feel that season three is the, we're going to have the time away from Grogu, where it's just this guy. And he's dealing with the fact of, like, he's irrevocably changed from the child. And what does that mean for him as a person now?
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm expecting he'll get embroiled in Mandalorian politics. And what is going to happen with the Darksaber? What does it mean? Is he the Mandalore? He does not want to be the Mandalore. So what does that mean?
Right.
And I also think that I would expect that we're going to have some more character building for Gideon, because I would love to see Gideon sort of, it, almost in prison, kind of explaining what he did to the Mandalorians, what the Siege of Mandalore felt like.
The,
and
the Night of the Thousand Tears, right? That's
right.
We don't know
and
what
and
that
how
is
he's
yet.
Probably directly responsible for that, and how that makes everyone hate him even more. Because I still think he's, especially now that he survived this, I still think he's the show's big bad, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's what I feel season three is going to be. To be honest, my suspicion would be that season four would be reuniting with Grogu. Something causes him to go and meet up with Grogu. And that's where, like, I could see it.
So you think it's him seeking out Grogu, not Grogu seeking out him?
I see it as, like, Grogu reaching out to him and him responding to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for it is because two reasons. One, I don't think my ear caught and got caught on the culmination thing. You're absolutely right. That is exactly what he says. And there's a part of me that's just like, right, but you wrote season two after you wrote season one. Like, I'm sure you have an arc, you know, Favreau, and you have an arc in your head. But you can't get me to believe that, like, You when you started season one, like, and season two is going to end with Luke Skywalker. We're already talking to Mark, right? Or like, oh, we're going to make a Boba Fett spinoff show because Tamara is so up for it. Like, no, season one had to be successful for you to get any lease to go further than you already did. Because obviously season two is a bigger production. Obviously now we have, you know, two shows directly branching out of this. And other shows like Rangers of the New Republic and Ahsoka are going to have been seated now in this show.
Yes.
Like, it is the start of a big umbrella of new content. But I have to admit, I don't want the comic book problem. When comic books would do big crossover events, it would always be like, if you want to read this, read X-Men 117. Oh, X-Men 117 leans into Spectacular Spider-Man number 32. Like, and you had to go buy all these books you don't normally buy just to get the story. And I personally don't want Grogu to be in another show because I don't think this show is anything but Din Djarin and Son. Like, and so that story should be told in the frame of this show to me, because anything other than that is getting markety. You know,
well, you heard it here first, folks. That is what Mac wants, so that is how it shall be, as Star Wars has been since after Rogue One.
Well, because to me, the biggest thing about, like, what I've said it a million times about The Mandalorian. Yes, it is a serialized story. It is way more episodic than almost any other serialized story. I like that each episode is a story, mm-hmm. and that you can kind of watch them out of order and mm-hmm. still get something, whereas most serialized things are basically, you know, 9-hour movies that are just cut into parts.
Yes.
And I don't want Star Wars to become Marvel, where, like, if I missed Loki, I don't know what's going on in this new movie. And but admittedly, I love that about Marvel. So if it happens in Star Wars, it's not like I'm going to be like, oh, I'm done with Star Wars. Like,
well, but isn't Star Wars always been that? If you miss episode 4, do you really understand episode 7 truly? Like, you can watch it, but do you really get it? Like,
As a person who watched episode 6...
Those may have been examples.
As someone who watched episode 6 about 30 times before he ever saw another one, yeah. it works.
You can also go see Shang-Chi without having seen any other Marvel, and it works.
And real quick, and Shang-Chi is great because it does work, and yes. it is really good.
Yes.
I don't think you can go watch Avengers Endgame if you haven't seen Infinity War.
That's true, but picking the crossover team-up movie as your example of that, I think, is unfair.
But don't you think
because that is the exact specific purpose of that?
But don't you think if Grogu shows up in another show, that's a big event that's like a crossover event? Like if Grogu shows up in Ahsoka, don't you think that's part of?
It depends. If he's a recurring character in Ahsoka, because it's Luke, Ahsoka, and Grogu on Avengers, then no. But I don't think that's what it would be. Because I don't necessarily think that. I think it would be, like you're saying, it would be the stop of the week.
Again, I think Marvel's done a really good job of bridging gaps and reminding you of information. Yeah. But, like, I think you would be very lost watching, like, WandaVision if you didn't watch the Thor movies. Like, when What's-Her-Face comes in, scientist lady.
Darcy.
When Darcy comes in. If you even watched Thor, like, I guess you could get it's just a weird, quirky character. And same with... the guy from Ant-Man, the FBI agent. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you could not know who they are and be fine, but, like, obviously it's designed for people to know that stuff. So I guess what I'm just trying to say is I like Star Wars as episodic, and more mm-hmm. importantly, I like that Star Wars is about this story is happening over here and that story is happening over here, and it's a giant galaxy and not everyone's connected.
Well, I do agree with that, but they really fight hard against that, it seems.
But that's again.
I mean, look at this. They created Batuu, yes. and everyone outside of hardcore fans. Oh, why would they do that? I just want to go to Hoth. Like, people don't want new. People don't want want. How does Luke Skywalker connect to this? I don't agree with that, but that's what I think.
The sequel trilogy has taught us one thing. While it may feel
have
nice,
a plan.
No. While it may feel like good business to just fan service to your current audience. That's not how you grow an audience. Mm-hmm. And those people are going to die someday. So if you don't have young people getting into this, like, again, I feel Disney knows that, like, Resistance was, like, way more important than Solo or Rogue One. Like, they just are. Because those movies are for you old fans. And you're great. And you keep buying licensed products. We love you. At the same time, we want Star Wars to be here 40 years from now. And you won't be. So we need to keep cultivating new kids. And as we transition to talking about gallery, I love that they end with, like, Favreau and Dave all talk about the fact of, like, having Luke in the end of Mandalore is supposed to help connect. They're like, I want, you know, dads and sons and moms and daughters to watch this. And sure, they might be getting something different out of it. But it connects all of them because Star Wars is a family show. It is meant to be the broadest audience possible because it's fables and myths and things we have been telling ourselves as humans since the dawn of verbal speech, you know?
Absolutely agree about the broadest audience possible. I mean, that should be what Star Wars is always going for. It should not be so violent that it excludes people, or the topic should not be so dense that they, you know, I think a really good example of this in modern filmmaking is The Matrix. I think The Matrix trilogy are three fantastic movies and maybe the most creative original thing to come out of Hollywood since that. Like,
I say, in 99, Matrix was the new Star Wars. This must be how people felt in 77. This is something you've never seen before. You can barely understand how it's possible. And it's so dazzling to your senses and and making you think.
Yes.
Right. Because most people had never gotten, like, there is no way to prove that I'm not in a simulation. This is terrifying. This is making me think
and
when I leave.
Then The Matrix Reloaded comes out, and it's packed with lore, and it's all about a movie about being worried about your future choices, and it's dense with explanation and dialogue, and compared to the first one, it's a little bit slower, and it's a little bit more involved with, like, being inside the Matrix, right? And it's a very different movie from the first one.
Sure.
And a lot of people, I think, find it very, very interesting. I actually think it's my favorite of the three.
Okay.
But having said all of that, there are a lot of people who look at that from the outside in and go, oh, that's not for me. This isn't what the first one was. I'm not interested in it. And you have to have that universe. You have to build and have that creativity, like you're saying, to bring people in from all of these generations and to bring families in and to bring all ages, right? You have to have creativity. It can't just be violence for violence sake. Like, you have to do something that is unique or interesting. And obviously, I mean, this should be obvious, right? But we had a scene of Kylo talking to Pipes in the finale of the biggest franchise of all time. So, like, some people don't have creativity, and it's fine. But, like, well, with Star Wars, that's...
I would also argue the other major thing with Rise of Skywalker that is, I think, why he's talking to Pipes is because if you have a great idea, let's greenlight it and go. If you don't have a great idea, let's not greenlight it and go. And I think that Rise of the Skywalker was so screwed by the fact of Disney's entire business is relying on a tentpole this coming out at this time. Yeah. And I think, honestly, I think COVID taught us, like, as an industry, it's okay. You can delay it and it'll still be okay. Like,
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, what I mean is, I think that, like, I think Disney realized that our properties are strong enough that if we release Black Widow a year plus later than it's supposed to be, will it do as well? Well, obviously not. We've already, you know, depreciated value on it. We had to pay the checks without the box office money we were making from it. But it's still one of the most successful movies of this entire year, and a perfectly successful movie. Is it the same level as all the Marvel movies? Well, no. Shang-Chi says that when you get more theaters open, you make more money. But at the same time, I think it got to a place where I think we can understand that if the movie's not ready, delaying it's okay.
Oh, I completely agree. And I hope that's where we're at. I mean, we've already heard, like, initially, right, Mando season 3 was supposed to be right at the end of Book of Boba Fett. And then people said, well, the spring, you know, a month later or so. And now people are saying not till fall next year. So, you know, and that's fine. Take the time. And, you know, the point of all of this is the gallery and the Mandalorian and all of this stuff is we're all very, very excited, I think, at where Star Wars is going.
Yes.
We're very, very happy about where it is right now. And we just want to see that continue. I think we're all just a little in a place of the last 7 years of Star Wars have been by the seat of our pants, right?
Sure.
All of a sudden, the franchise is being bought. All of a sudden, there's going to be a new trilogy. All of a sudden, there are these anthology films. All of a sudden, we've gone through a dozen different directors for three movies. You know, it's like all of these changes kept happening. And throughout all of this, you have, you know, the stewardship of a new franchise of films. And there has been a lot of people who have felt burned by certain things. And you know what? Hey, if you're one of those people, that's totally fine. But I think we're all at a point now where we're all in agreement that we're really happy with where The Mandalorian ended.
Mm-hmm.
We're really happy with where it's going. And we feel that, you know, we're optimistic about Star Wars for the future. I know, Mac, you know, there isn't much that causes you and I to not be optimistic about Star Wars, but I think we're in a place now where the fandom as a whole feels kind of as good as it has for a while.
I think that's very positive. I think you still see the sutures, but I think the wound of the sequel trilogy is sealed. Not healed yet, but is on its way. It's
scabbing over. If you're the people making clickbaity videos like with stuff like, how dumb is Dave Filoni saying Ahsoka is more powerful than Luke? You're what's wrong with the internet. Stop. Because one, that's not anywhere what he says.
Well,
but two, it's also probably true. So stop. Just stop.
Also, last thing. They're fictional people and they can be whatever they want to be based on the dramaton saturation around them at any given moment. Yeah.
Just stop. Stop trying to cancel Dave Filoni saying he doesn't understand Star Wars and he's just a shill of George Lucas for clicks.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
One of the most aware things I think that was said during Gallery, and I apologize, I don't remember who exactly said it, but was talking about in a world of bespoke content where everyone only wants content tailor-made for them, the fact the Mandalorian was able to cut across many, many swaths of demographics is rare. And I'm like, he's absolutely right. That is where we are right now, is I don't want, I was talking to you pre-show. So there's the new He-Man show that came out on Netflix. And I go, I don't know if we know who its audience is, because the lead-in audience is the kids who watch She-Ra, which probably aren't into a more heavy-handed, kind of brutal revamp of this 80s show they have no connection to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really reflect the animation, the style, the feelings that they had in the show that they're leading into.
Right.
And people in my brother's generation, who's older than me, like, he wants He-Man to be validated. He wants the exact 80s show, but made in a mindset that he wants as, you know, a guy in his mid-40s. And I'm like, and I don't think there's enough an audience to justify that. And it doesn't matter, because that's what we want. We want bespoke content. And some people like me get Mandalorian, which is bespoke content made for all the things in Star Wars I like in a stew. But most people don't get that. Most people have to deal with the fact of like, hey, this is maybe not for you. Well, why is anything mean not made for you? Well, despite your filter bubble of your social media and your YouTube, where you can find people who are much more in the same lane as you and think the same things as you, it doesn't actually make more of you.
Doesn't represent the entire population.
Correct.
Oh, boy. Well, clearly, we have had a lot of thoughts on Star Wars as a whole. So let's try and refocus on the gallery a little bit and try and talk about a few more things, because there's the Plo Koon of it all.
I thought Plo Koon was really funny, that was the code word they were using in the script and in all the production materials of coming back. And I love that the fact that the only reason that sells is because we all know Dave Filoni freaking loves Plo Koon.
And I love that he addresses it. I love that he knows. He's like, oh, it's great.
Well, especially because it's like, oh, it's Plo Koon. I'm like, no, I saw Plo Koon die. Like, he's dead. Like, no coming back from...
Yeah, but everybody thinks Mace Windu's still alive, too.
And he's also very dead.
I agree.
He got shot out of a window.
The Jedi are dead. There's a whole team of Inquisitors whose job it is to make sure.
Do you think they'd miss Mace? No, they went there and they found that some kid named Boba Fett standing next to him and shot him in the head just to be sure.
Just to be sure.
The thing that was interesting about the gallery is I like they spent, I would say, almost half of it. I think I'm not going crazy. I mean, they're talking about Luke and how important that is, but like, I like they're basically like, yeah, we know you kids can make deep fakes at home, okay? It was hard, okay? We had to do it in secret. The technology was like a few generations behind what you kids are using. We know. Because it was interesting to me as someone who is, you know, my background's filmmaking, so like I've been aware of deepfakes for a long time because it's been a technology that's been growing, and it's coming out of veins I've already seen in like video games where they're doing these AI upreses where the robot is putting information down that wasn't actually there, but it's making really, really, really good predictions on what should be there. And the thing I thought was really interesting is their deepfakes looked really good. And you're like, yes, if they do this again, they're going to use deepfake technology, because other than the square, the matte line of where the deepfake ended and the actor's face was, other than cleaning that up, which I'm sure ILM is perfectly capable of doing, the fidelity was much better, even if the optical effect looks a little more off, right? The emotions, the expressions were better than the de-aging that they actually ended up using, just because deepfakes are creepy and awesome.
Yeah, they are.
And I like that they're like, well, we went with de-aging. And like, I'll be honest, I never really knew. Oh, de-aging is just, an incredibly painful process of basically Photoshopping every frame. Oh, no wonder it looks convincing. No wonder it's labor intensive and Disney's like the only company that does it, because they must have some good algorithms to help them, because that sounds like a lot of, that's up there with like,
well, didn't they Tron say they,
1 where they're cutting out all the circuit boards by hand.
Don't they say they used a third party company for that, for Ant-Man? They talked about it or whatever.
Yeah. And it sounds like ILM was subcontracting.
Yes.
Best way to put it. Because the one guy was, he said like, he's been with ILM since like, you know, Forrest Gump and stuff, and they've been doing this technology for a long time. It just keeps evolving, and I'm going to guess it just gets to the point where ILM has the tech and the technique, and then they hire visual effects artists to do the work.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because ILM's got to be ILM's gargantuan
and growing all the time. There's always job posting, so if you want to relocate,
I always am
looking.
Head out to Marin County or San Francisco. Mm-hmm, you're ready to go.
Boy, it is nice out there.
But I thought it was very interesting that I don't want to say an apology, but it was just very much a, like, look, yeah, when 3 months after our show comes out, you got a pretty good deepfake. Good for you, kid.
I would love to know when all of those interviews for Gallery were shot, absolutely, to know if there was some, like, damage control element to it. My take on it is, like, hey, they gave us what they thought was the best. And if some kid on TikTok can make one that he thinks looks better and people think it looks better, then that's great. And they should hire him. And that's exactly what they did.
That's true.
And so it worked out for everybody. And my opinion on it is, I guess, if we're going to keep doing this, if we're not just going to, for the love of God, recast, if we're going to keep trying to make people with computers, then fine. Let's make it look as good as possible. Hire as many people as you need to do. Put as many man hours into it. But God, just recast.
So many of my favorite fun things about that Gallery episode is just like the little things. Like, yeah, we had to hire a body double for Luke, but you can't put out a call for we need a body double for Luke.
Right.
So, like, I love the idea that they're just getting mug shots together and going like, he kind of looks like Hamill. He's pretty close.
Good height. Good size.
All right. You're going to come in. You're going to be reading for the role of Cobb. Okay. Great. Oh, you did great. Come over here, kid. You're going to be Luke Skywalker. Because they said that you brought him in for another reading because they just wanted to get it, a vibe. Yeah. Can this kid handle it?
Yeah.
And in the end, they're like, we're hiring you for something completely different. And by the way, for like a year and a half, you cannot talk about it.
All right, kid. You're here to play the crate dragon. Now,
hey, let me hear your best roar.
Get down and Andy Serkis it. Yeah. Okay.
I also have to say, I think in the end, I have to admit, like, I think Mark Hamill's was kind of stunt casting in the sense of like, yeah, we brought him in to be on stage that day. I'm like, yeah, but you really didn't need to. You ended up using none of his footage. Like, it sounds like as an acting coach, that was his most important thing.
But what do you mean? When they put him in the bubble and got all the shots of his face, wasn't that all?
Well, that's because they went with de-aging. If you had just recast or something like
that. Oh,
like,
well, sure, if you had just recast, right.
But here's my thing.
Right.
But in the end, and then the thing that I thought was like Dave Favreau, I'm just making them one person now.
Yeah.
John Favreau, again, little things. He's like, yeah, and people aren't realizing how good these are because the voice was fake. Did you know that, internet? And I was like, ooh, clap, clap. Good job. And then Matt Wood, you know, the Brett Burke coming again, is just basically like, oh, yeah, we have this technology. We have for years. We keep working on it.
Yeah.
And we grabbed an audiobook Hamill did at the time, and we just put it in it, and like, what audiobook is that? Did, like, Corvette Summers have an audiobook?
So the big question here is, like, with all of this deepfake stuff and all this technology, I do want to make it clear of, like, I do like seeing Mark Hamill on set. I do like having, you know, him giving the inflections. So whether how real or fake the performance, the voice, however real or fake, however you want to describe it, having him on set is a very interesting thing, seeing him give the lines. And also, like you said, him giving the inflection, him doing the hand gestures. Even if you did have another actor there, that stuff is invaluable. So it's great to see.
Yeah, the line they said where, like, it's Mark Hamill teaching a younger version of himself how to be him. And like I said, I think that's all very, very good. And I think there is some energy you get from having him on set. It is just like, Solo turned out great, and Harrison Ford, I don't even think, did a set visit. Like, it works. Right. We know these characters, and Mark Hamill originated it. I guess the thing about it is, like, maybe this is doing too much theater stuff when I was in, like, high school and college, but, like, there's a concept called the originator, right? Mark Hamill originated the character of Luke Skywalker. Every Luke Skywalker, anyone who ever plays Luke Skywalker, whether it's in a fan film or whether it's in an animated show or whatever, they're always going to be referencing.
Right.
Well, how far are you away from that origination? Like, how close are you to that? Because that's what we think of as.
Right.
Right. But I'm a theater kid in the sense of, but the character is bigger than one actor. You know, even in the origination, there's an understudy. Right. In case that actor gets sick, the show goes on. Like,
right.
There is someone else who can do that job, and they probably don't bring exactly the same thing. And that's a good thing. Think about the fact if Anakin Skywalker as a Jedi, if all we had was Hayden Christensen's, you know, hour and a half of 2 and 3, and that's it. What if we never had Matt Lantern's turn at Anakin? Think of how much more shallow of a character that person is without another actor bringing something in.
Completely agree, and
adding it.
We're on the same page with all this, I think.
So at the end of the day, I'm with you of like, just recast. We're smart. We can deal with it. If I can deal with the fact that Edward Norton used to be the Hulk and now he's not, and Terrence Stamp used to be War Machine and now he's not.
Stamp is someone different who is also in Star Wars.
I would love to see him as. Yeah, he's that would be really though. Funny.
Yeah, he'd make a good War Machine.
I'm really mixing up names today.
It's okay.
But like,
we're smart, like you said.
We're smart enough to figure this out. And like, things that like scare me from like a filmmaking perspective is like, great example is Chadwick Boseman, who was Black Panther, mm-hmm. amazing, absolutely knocked out of the park, amazing, mm-hmm. especially considering he was fighting cancer the whole time. Sick him to his cancer, and he's no longer with us. And there's so much scuttlebutt that we're going to write out T'Challa. And I'm like, he's too important to the way the universe is. I understand if you want to walk away from the character and give that space, because a lot of people don't want to deal with a recast, but don't write that character out just because their actor isn't here. Like I don't want to see a Solo be, they can't make that movie. Why? The deep fake's not good enough to put Harrison Ford in that movie. Yeah, but it's a really good movie. We'll just get, the character is bigger than a person.
Yeah.
Also, am I crazy? So this during the part where they talked about the different techniques they can use, right? They showed Tarkin, which is someone who mm-hmm. hasn't watched Rogue One since it came out in theaters. I went, man, that is pretty convincing. Pause. Yeah, but it's on screen too long. Even this little clip, like when he turns, I'm like, yeah. And then he stands there for a second. I'm like,
yeah.
And now I'm scrutinizing you too much, which admittedly, something people should say. They talked about like all the mannerisms and all the things that go into tricking you into buying in that this is the person you're looking at. A big thing is the human face is ultra hard mode for VFX. Humans are so good at decoding faces, reading them, looking for subtle things, looking for emotion, looking for blood blush response, all this kind of stuff that like, it is the hardest thing you could ever do is create a fake person because people are so obvious to us. We look at a bush and we can see a face in it. We look at like scrambled eggs, we see a face in it. Like we are designed to be face recognition machines. So I think it is something where that technology is going to get better and better and better and better and better. And it's always going to be one step behind our scrutiny.
And we already have it, seen it get better and better and better. And hey, I mean, maybe next year when we're watching Mando season 3, we'll be talking about how an episode or chapter 22 or whatever, a new Luke Skywalker appearance. And he was in the whole thing is all computer generated and it was perfect. So maybe that's where we'll be at. Who knows?
And I think the more you put it in the background, the less obvious it is.
Of course.
But I guess the whole thing about it is I'm with you with recasting. I want Luke Skywalker to be here when my great grandkids are watching Star Wars and there's still new stories about Luke being told.
Yeah.
And that means that we have to get beyond, the originating actor. Oh, the thing I was going like, when they were showing all the things, they showed Leia putting her face over top of a body double to get a shot in Rise of Skywalker. I thought they swore in a Bible they were not going to digitally recreate her at all. But they did. Why didn't you just go the whole nine yards and write her character like they were originally written in episode 9 rather than these stunted like reblockings of shots just to make
it? Let's not go down that the episode 9.
I want Rise of Skywalker special edition.
Everybody was emotionally on edge with Carrie Fisher, and everyone made the decisions they thought were right at the time. And we got the movie we got.
I was just that like meme of Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen like, oh, gotcha. You did it. You said you did it. You did it. It was, and I guess actually now that I think about it, like, I guess we knew that because
she was in the movie.
Well, no.
So that's
young Leia was that where it's a de-aged version of her. I doubt she filmed the thing that would de-age her originally, but I just thought it was funny. And I think in certain veins, it makes sense to recreate the character. And I think in certain veins, like with the age difference that Luke is supposed to be here 6 years after Jedi and where Mark Hamill is living right now, I think a recast was justified. Whereas the entire sequel trilogy, yes, hire those actors.
Right.
They're the appropriate age for where the characters are.
Right. This was a great episode of Gallery.
Yes.
I'm really, really glad they did it. Obviously, we had so much fun with season one of Gallery and season two. I actually haven't gone back and rewatched season two of Gallery, you know, the like 90-minute special that they put out. Mm-hmm. But I should, and then watch this subsequently after it. I think there's one thing we both agree on for sure, and that's that we're very excited for the future of Star Wars Mandalorian and television. And hey, Rogue Squadron is in production.
Yeah.
And who knows what that's going to be. Is it going to be a Michael Stackpole novel? Probably not. Is it going to be...
Is it going to reference a Michael Stackpole series of novels? Probably.
Probably. Is it going to take place in the original trilogy? Is it going to take place in the New Republic?
Is
it going
to take place
in the new era? Who knows?
Is Wedge Antilles going to be there, played by a new actor, or are they just going to deepfake him? Who knows?
Will Snap Wexley be involved? Tune in next time for all these amazing questions answered and more.
All right. Well, let's go talk about what's happening in Star Wars right after this.
Let's do it.
And another episode of Star Wars All In comes to a close. We talked about Gallery, we talked about Mandalorian, we talked about Boba Fett, we talked about quibbles and problems with the way that we're doing deepfakes and acting, and we went through all of it. It was fun.
We did. It was a fun episode. It's good to be back, Mac. I know we had to take a week off last week, and it is really great to be here with you again today. I'm really glad we got to talk about Mandalorian and talk about something that we're both so passionate about and have so many feelings around. It was a really, really fun episode, and I can't wait to do it again next week.
Awesome. Well, I got two things I just want to say as programming notes. One, we are at 2 years now.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah. We had a lot of, it's been a busy, busy week for me and a very harrowing week. So I'm sorry we didn't have an episode last week if you're listening to this in real time. But we last week would have celebrated our 2 year anniversary of doing this stupid, crazy thing.
So instead to celebrate, we took a break. Sort of.
A vacation, yes.
Neither of us were really...
I was working harder than I have in years.
But hey, we are recharged. We had a lot of energy coming into today. I've never seen Mac this awake at 8 a.m. to record an episode. So
not usually.
No.
And then the second thing I want to talk about is, what were your thoughts on the new thing in Star Wars that's happened since we last talked of, the trailer for Star Wars Visions?
You know what? I didn't watch it.
Really?
So here's my thing about trailers. We've talked about this a little bit, and I've talked about it with some other people too. Is like, if I'm already going to watch something, I'm kind of at a point now where I don't need to watch a trailer. Like, even when Dune came out, I knew I was going to go see Dune, but I still wanted to see the trailer because I know so little about Dune, right? When the new Spider-Man trailer came out, I watched the first 30 seconds. It was like, yep, I'm in, and shut it off.
And so basically, like, you're just like, it has Star Wars on the box. I'm going to watch it.
I want to know kind of, if I don't know what I'm getting into, I want to watch a trailer.
Well,
but if I know what to expect, or at least know what I'm buying, I want to see as little as possible. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
Well, my kind of meditation on it is someone who's watched both it and the Japanese trailer, which was interesting to see both of them.
Sure.
And also the difference in voice acting choices. You can tell that Americans and Japanese have different ears. Different characters belong in different registers of the human voice.
I gotcha.
What's cool is I like that it's an anthology. So this is sort of like Star Wars doing what Gotham Knight did with Batman, or the Animatrix did with The Matrix. The only thing I'll say about it is, if you're an anime fan, I think you're going to really enjoy it. If you're not an anime fan, I think you're going to find this is incredibly niche and pandering to anime fans. Because I think it is very much meant to be for anime creators in Japan to have an adventure twisting everything of Star Wars to their sensibilities, almost to the point that, like, it's almost too much anime. It's too away from Star Wars as a place. And I go, that's the point. The point
that's,
is to make
that's
it,
what you want.
It's meant to be this sort of niche
I want
thing.
Them to go all in. I don't want it to be a half effort.
Where, but I think the thing about it is, like, I will warn, I expect a lot of people who don't regularly watch anime will be like, what the heck's going on? It's like, it's a vision. It's for funsies. Mm. It's the power of myth. Don't take it so seriously.
It's almost like, as we talked about, that there are going to be different Star Wars for different people.
Yes.
As the universe becomes bigger.
Absolutely.
And we're all struggling with that in our own ways, and we get it. But hey, it's okay. That's why we're here to talk about it.
Right. And we will be able to talk about it even more as we go forward in time, because I'm Mac.
And I'm Ross.
And until next Wednesday,
may the Force be with you.
This production is not endorsed by any other property and is the sole responsibility of Mac Purvis III, Ross Grieco, and those involved in its production. It is meant for entertainment purposes only. Other than content provided by this production's providers, all music, music clips, sound bites, rights are reserved, and their respective owners have not endorsed any aspect of this show. Copyright 2021.